Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Another packed show this week where we spoke to Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers about the Super Bowl and who he thinks is going to lift the Lombardi Trophy. And I spoke to former Ireland and Leinster hooker Shane Byrne about Ireland's chances away to France in the Six Nations. Declan Drake gives us all of the GAA news and talks about Kilmacud Crokes in detail. And Alan Cawley looks at the start of the SSE Airtricity League and a look back to last night's President's Cup. Download now wherever you find your podcasts.
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Very good indeed. Excited. It was a great weekend last week.
Yeah,
it
was fantastic. Yeah, they played brilliant. It was going to be a great match today as well. I'm really looking forward to it, you know?
Yeah, so am I. No, I mean, it's interesting. We'll be talking to Shane Byrne about it in more detail at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting, you know, because unfortunately Johnny Sexton is injured, but I think it's exciting, and really exciting, because, you know, we're now thrown into a situation where the question that everybody's been asking, which is, what are we going to do when Johnny Sexton isn't around anymore, and how are we going to prepare for the World Cup, is going to be put in front of us with Joey Carberry taking centre stage and trying to lead the ship. So I think it's a case of how all the rest of the lads do around him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a big game as well. You know, I think if they can win this, you know, they can go on and you know, win the whole Six Nations. It's a big crunch game, isn't it? I know Wales are playing Scotland. Scotland had a good win against England last week as well. But I think Ireland and France are the two best teams this year, without a doubt. You know, so it's going to be a crunch game, you know. It's always tough. I mean, you know what it's like going to Paris to play. It's always tough to play there. But yeah, I'm sure you've got some great memories of playing there over the years.
Oh, it's great. It's a fabulous place, Ken. It really is. I mean, one of the best memories I have is you stay outside, well, you used to anyway in my day, you stay a little bit outside of the centre of Paris in the Palace of Versailles, that area there, in a lovely hotel. But the bus ride in, it's about 10 kilometres to Saint-Denis. It's a bit further away, maybe even 15. It's a bit further away than the old Parc de Princes used to be. And the bus ride in is unreal. So you get in and gendarmes, as they call them over there, the motorbike cops, you've got about six to eight, or maybe even 10 of these lads. So I got a tip from one of the older heads in the team at the time. This is going back to 98, 99. He said, sit up the front of the bus, Reg. You'll love this. And you sit up. I sat up the front. The bikes took off, Ken. I'm not joking. We were doing 140 in a bus. There was no speed limiters back in those days. 120 to 140 kilometers an hour through the streets of Paris with these motorcycle cops literally kicking cars out of the way. It was unreal.
No way.
It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah, and you're clinging onto the seat. So you're kind of in your head, you've completely forgotten about the fact that you're going to be playing a match in an hour's time, you know. The excitement of this. So that was one of the best trips.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. And of course all the supporters as well, walking along and you know, like cheering you on as well. Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, and the supporters. I remember when we were playing in Wales in 2005 for the Grand Slam decider with Wales. It took us the absolute opposite of the French experience. We were staying in a hotel 1 kilometer from the ground, and we got the bus over, and it took us 45 minutes to get that 1 kilometer
because
the streets of Cardiff were jammed, and the Welsh were basically blocking the streets, and they were beating lumps out of the side of the bus, smashing the bus with their hands and singing at us and everything else. So we were actually late. We were late for a warm up into the ground. It was mad. We were that's the excuse we're given for losing that day.
Great memories. Yeah. Well, I'm sure. Hopefully, it'll be very. How do you fancy it going? Do you think it's going to be close or?
Very close. I do think it's going to be close. I still fancy Ireland's chances. I was very confident about Ireland before Johnny Sexton got injured. I think we've got a pack of forwards that can match theirs. France were a little bit unsteady last week against Italy, I thought they'd rack up a huge score. Now the weather was atrocious, so like they still won by 27 points, I think it was. The weather was atrocious last week, so I'll factor in that. It's a brilliantly exciting French team, but I'm just not quite sure that they're there as a team just yet. Like they will be the real danger for that team is going to be the World Cup in 2023. I think they'll be amazing favourites almost for that title, but I'm just not quite sure. There's just a little bit of tweaks and stuff to do with that for France, whereas I thought Ireland looked a lot more cohesive since, you know, the All Blacks in the autumn and, you know, that first game against Wales. They were very well put together. There's an amazing front row, fantastic second row, brilliant back row. 9 and 10 were working well, and the whole back line are kind of looking sharp and edgy. So it's just, you know, I was very confident, but it's just how much Sexton's exclusion now will affect the heads of everybody else. Or will they overcome that and just go, you know what, we don't need to worry about that, we can just move on? But still fancy our chances. I definitely do.
Oh, that's good. Oh yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, fingers, you know, crossed. Yeah, looking forward to it.
How was your week? I know you've been busy with the Players' Championship.
It's been I know you talked about George McDonagh there, just like I was getting very excited with that lucky 15 last week. I don't know whether you did it yourself,
but you
had the first two winners up, didn't he? 10-1 and a 6-1, was it? Then Manila Indo was the tour de horse, and that came a very close second.
Yeah.
And if that had a won, that would have been it would have been incredible, you know.
Yeah, I know, it was absolutely incredible. I was exactly like you watching it. I didn't actually watch it when it was unfolding, but I did do it for once, and I don't normally do it, but I did do it.
And when
I clicked in to see, geez, I must check that bet and see what happened. And I clicked in, there it was. I think we got 6 or 7-1 out of it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
really good.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Yeah, but the first two when they go green, you know, it gets quite exciting. Like I must say, it's brilliant.
I know.
Well done, George. He's tipped up some great winners over the last few weeks, hasn't he? Brilliant.
Red hot. We've had a lucky 15 up over the last 6 or 7 weeks as well. So we've had all four up. So that's a bit of a rarity. So he's well worth tuning into. I know lots of listeners are mad keen on hearing George's. A lot more than hearing you and me, that's for sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
What about the Super Bowl? Will you give that a bit of a look?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we'll be here for the final. The final of the Players will be on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, and
who's in the Players' final?
Afterwards.
Ken? Barry Hawkins.
Barry Hawkins got in yesterday. Yeah, he beat Ricky Wallen yesterday. He only actually, it's quite an amazing story. After the German, it was the cutoff, and it was the top 16 players, and he wasn't at the German. So he thought there was going to be at least a couple of players that would overtake him. Yeah. And but nobody overtook him. So he actually got into this Players' Championship, and now he's in the final, you know, which is quite incredible. Played really well in his previous match against Bing Tao, 1-6-5, and then he beat Ricky Wallen quite easily last night. So he's been in the final of the Masters in January. Yeah. He played Neil Robertson in that, and Neil Robertson is in the semi-final playing Jimmy Robertson tonight. I would fancy Neil Robertson to get through. So it could be a repeat of the Masters final. But it's great to see Barry playing so well. And the crowds, we're in a new venue here in Wolverhampton.
Right.
And it's the most densely sort of populated for snooker in the whole of sort of Great Britain for participation of snooker. You know, there's about 8 snooker leagues within about a sort of 30 kilometer radius here, you know. So there's huge participation in this area, and the crowds have been fantastic all week. You know, we had a couple of the Wolves footballers down this week, and I had a little game with them. Ruben Neves and John Ruddy. I had a little game with them. John Ruddy, we had a little black ball. I said we're going to play a little penalty, sort of snooker penalty shootout.
Right.
So just a black ball game, and John Ruddy went in off after his second shot, unfortunately for him. And then Ruben Neves, he potted the black, and then he did a little trick shot. So it was quite a we had a little bit of fun down that, you know. But no, lovely lads, you know. There's actually about 5 or 6 footballers. Diego Jota was here watching. James Maddison was here, and of course those two lads as well. And there was another few lads from from Birmingham and Aston Villa as well down. So it was quite, there's quite a lot of soccer players. Now, Kurt Zouma, thankfully, didn't torn make up. It. You know, he was too busy. He was too busy kicking cats around his kitchen, unfortunately, you know.
Yeah,
terrible that, wasn't it?
The less said about that, the better. I mean, geez.
It was shocking.
You know, I know you are, and I'm the same. I'm a big softie for animals.
How was he even picked to play? That's what I can't understand, you know?
It's typical, you know, typical money. But it was a bad move on their part. They didn't think that one through.
Oh, shocking.
The backlash, the backlash wasn't good. But yeah, the less said about that fool, the better. I don't even want to acknowledge him.
Not a bad thing to do, you know.
Exactly. All right, look, I'm running out of time. We're these segments are getting shorter and shorter every week. So
I know.
Got to let you go. So are you working on the final?
Okay. Yeah, I'll be there. There's no play today. Play to the first semi-final. The two Robertsons. I think it's the first time they've ever played in a major semi-final. But looking forward to that tonight and then the final tomorrow.
Time to turn our attention to rugby now and, of course, the Six Nations. And I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Shane Byrne. Morning, Shane. How are you?
Morning, Reg. How are we?
I'm very good. Excited. Cracking day ahead of us. The Schools Cup starts tomorrow as well, which is great. We'll see a cracker with that in the Leinster Schools Cup with Michaels taking on Blackrock. But that's another day's conversation. Today, of course, it's Ireland taking on France away from home. But it's actually, do you know what? Before I get into that, I just want to give quick mention to last night. Did you get to see the 20s game at all?
No, I didn't see it. I'm reading all about it this morning. It sounds like an absolutely fantastic game.
It was brilliant. I caught the second half of it. And, I'm sure a couple of the French supporters won't be too happy with the referee. She was absolutely fantastic, I have to say. She stood her ground and made some very, very tough calls and tough decisions. But Ireland 20s were magnificent. And they got there literally and the clock was going into the red.
Yeah, last minute.
Score that last minute try and convert it. So well done to them. And the other one, of course, was a bit of a shock. Italy 20s beating England 20s, 6-0. So that was an absolute shock of a result. So things not going great in England at the minute.
No, I'd like that trend to continue.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anyway, getting on to the seniors. Obviously, away to France, we both know how enormous a task it is to try and go there and win. But in recent years, it hasn't been as daunting a task, maybe, as it might have been in our day. But Joey Carberry getting injured now adds a different dimension to it. What are your reads on the game?
Yeah, well, firstly, I suppose you could probably say this is the first time that it is as daunting as it is now to go back to France, because they haven't been, the traditional French rugby hasn't existed for quite a while now, you know, but it's back in force at the moment between the November internationals and, the form that they're showing. It is a big, big task to head out there. It's one of those things that you need to do. It's all the cliches. You need to silence the crowd. You need to do all these things to get yourselves into the right place. But Johnny Sexton getting injured, look, like everybody in the country, I went, oh, Jesus. You know, and it looks like he's only going to miss one game. It's a hamstring strain. Like, it's, such an unfortunate thing. But here we go, Joey Carberry. You've been put in the place. There's been loads of criticism about the lack of gameplay he's had. Shouldn't have been on the bench. Jack Carty should be there. He's the form out half. But simply put, Joey Carberry just has to stand up. Now, we know he is oodles as a talent. At this stage, he's plenty of experience. And he just needs to stand up to be counted, because this will either make or break him. If he plays well today and does exactly what's needed, he's made, he's fixed, he's in situ. And look, these are the opportunities that we played the game for.
There's plenty of people saying, you know, like you, I was winced a little bit when I heard Sexton was injured, because, you know, a lot of people saying 2023 World Cup is the real thing we're going to aim for. But I don't look at it that way. You know, you're in the Six Nations Championship. You're in the moment now. This is one of the biggest tournaments in the world, and you want to go and win it, like all of us fans do now at this stage. So I did wince when I heard that, but then, you know, talking to a few people, it was kind of decided, well, you know what? This time had to come at some stage. You know, we're not writing Johnny Sexton off here, but if it happened during the World Cup, we need to know that we have some backup and we have some replacements. So maybe it's a good thing.
Correct. Correct. And that's, you know, progression happens. Johnny Sexton has been amazing. Like, you know, he's been in the twilight of his career, it seems like, for ages. But the simple fact is, he is the man for the job at the moment because of the way he's playing. But, and it, the debate has been about, you know, who's coming next. And, you know, Carby, his injuries have really, really stifled his career since he's moved down to Munster. But, like, you know, this is his time. You know, this is made for someone to stand up. It really is. And we just hope the game goes well, goes his way. You know, he's been there, done that. We saw he against New Zealand in November internationals, he played well when he came on. Not brilliant last week, I'd have to say. You know, although he was looking to play the same style of game. But, you know, it's just, you know, do or die now. Just get on with it. You know, like, it's... I know I'm falling back on cliches here, but that's kind of what it is, because there's very little you can say to it that, you know, because he's played so little, you can't say, oh, well, no, his form is okay and everything will be grand. No, it's just he has to be confident in the players around him and just get on with it. And he has mountains of talent. And we just hope it all comes together today.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's move on from the out of half position. Last week's performance against Wales was very efficient, is the word I'd use, without getting out of control, because let's face up to the fact that Wales were poor, they're changing in personnel and all of that kind of stuff. So it was a very efficient performance. But they're up against a fantastic team. Everybody's talking about how good they were. I must admit, I didn't think France were as good last week as I expected them to be. I thought there was definitely shortcomings there. But the battle of the two packs is going to be the winning of this game today, you'd have to say. How do we stack up, do you think?
I think fantastically. Yeah. I really do. It was a strange one last week that despite the result, like, the result was a fantastic result. Like, there's no doubt about that. But I guarantee you, come Monday in the video session, they got given out to. Because when they were good, they were fantastic. Like, the first half of each half, if you know what I mean, they were amazing. The rugby they played was faultless. And you could actually, they were turning the Welsh defence inside out. They didn't know which way it was coming. But in the latter half, the second half of each half, they took the foot off. They took the foot off the boil and it wasn't good. The only thing that was consistent throughout the game, which I think is going to be very, very important today, is the defence was good the whole time. It was patient, organised, aggressive. I think that is going to be a huge, huge plus for them today. There's such energy in that team. It really, the enthusiasm. And, like, you know, there's the first time for a lot of these guys, like, guys playing have 10, 12 caps, and last week would have been the first time playing in front of a big crowd, feeling that atmosphere. And you know the atmosphere in Paris is amazing. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. They have the brass bands and the drums and everything, the flags everywhere. It's absolutely an amazing place to play. We're talking with the pack. I think our pack is as good as you get around. Yeah. You know, I really do. I the scrum set piece, I think it's centered around the dynamism. Oh, geez, there, I can't even say the word of our back row. Yeah. I think they're just immense. I think it's such a well balanced. I don't know what Van der Vleer is eating for breakfast. He is just out of this world at the moment, and balanced with Doris and Conan, and then you go into the pack. Like, we have a front row that, you know, they're referring to the front row as that front row. You know, they don't even name them anymore, you know, because they're just becoming such an absolutely incredible unit. And their play, scrum time is excellent, set piece line out is excellent, but it's the play around the park. You know, Tadhg Furlongs, that pass, he did the loop around back to Sexton, you know, like it was just nothing. Like, that was just beautiful to see. And that's what's signifying to me this change in this team. We saw it in November. We hoped it would continue in the Six Nations. It is. And that's the fact. I think these guys are going to go to Paris with no luggage, just going there wanting to win, and that's it.
Well, interestingly enough, you know, I've looked at this a bit as well, because I looked at Antonio, the tight head prop, who's going to be a
Yep. Man's
porter. He's 145 kilos.
Yeah.
Almost 23 stone. And like, so he's unshiftable. There's no question about it. Supporter will do well to hold his own there. You're looking at, you know, Cross in the second row. Again, a big man at 16 stone 8. But Willemse, across in the back row, I should say. But Willemse coming in at 19 stone 7. All of a sudden, you're looking at a huge beast. Now, that's much bigger than Ireland. Ryan and Byrne would be a stone to a stone and a half lighter than that.
Yeah, they're so more athletic. Yeah.
I was just going to say that. Do you think that we could see a more, you know, if Ireland upped the tempo of this game, would that be the game plan? Try and just run these big French lads around and tire them out, because that might be the best method.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But like, their bench is very good as well. You know, that's the thing with the French. They use their bench excellently. Whereas, ironically, our bench had very poor impact, I would have thought, last week. So there'll be a lot of pressure, a huge experience back onto our bench with Henderson and Henshaw. They're great to see. But the, I would say definitely that's part of it. You know, I think, you know, in Paris, it's not about getting huge wins. It's about parity in the scrum will do.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we need to score a big win there. I think parity in the scrum will do the job, because they have such a monster scrum. They really do. And I think Porter will be up to the job. And you know, he's in the gun.
Yeah, sorry. I agree with you on Porter. I think he'd be well able for the job on that. But I suppose what I'm thinking there is, we'll say they'll get parity up front, which is great. Then we're looking at the back line and where they might try and expose the French. But it's hard to see that. Now, you got Bundiaki and Ringrose in the centre. And Aki's been playing great stuff. But he's known for his physicality. Now, Ringrose would have more of the flair and the ball-playing stuff. But Mofana and Fiku in that centre combination are a deadly combination. They really are.
They're fabulous. So, yeah, they really are.
Is there a worry there that maybe the battering ram style of Aki might not work against this pair?
But yes, you're right. But I don't think he's playing like that anymore.
Okay.
I think he is. If you watch him in the defensive line and stuff, he's behaving. You know, he's following the defensive pattern, and the defense has been, as I said earlier on, has been absolutely excellent. And it's only when close to contact that they shoot up out of it and hit the man. It's a really, really educated defensive system, and that's what we're going to see. Yes, personally, I'd love to have seen Henshaw in, but the way the selection has gone is exactly right, bringing him back in on the bench. Nobody deserved to get dropped after that game. It is going to be a huge challenge. You know, that the French midfield they're just superb talents. They really are. And the problem with them is that, you know, French rugby, as we talked about earlier on, is back to a degree, and they don't behave with the normal rules. They will do the unexpected as well, and given the opportunity. So that needs to be something to, you know, that they're going to be watching the midfield. I don't think there's anywhere in Ireland that you would go, well, look, we're going to exploit that guy. I don't think there is anywhere in that. I think if France want to take on Ireland, it's just going to be through multiple phases and hoping that somebody leaves a gap somewhere, because I don't think there's anywhere that they'd be able to go, yeah, there's a weak link here. I genuinely don't.
Wide, if they were going to do it. I mean, you're looking at DuPont and Ntamack are the most exciting half of the combination in the championship. There's no question about it. DuPont is probably the player that has the ability to
turn. He's the heartbeat of it.
He really is, you know. But then you look out wide, and this is where I get a little bit concerned. Mac Hansen, man of the match last week, controversial decision, I think. There was
that was just all, part of it.
Yeah,
first cap.
Exactly, I you know, but whatever. But, you know, you're looking at Villiers and Penno, the two wingers, and they are serious strike runners and finishers when they get near the ball. I think if France are going to try and beat us, that's where they're going to try and beat us, get the ball out wide to them and see if they can get out on the extremities. How do you feel about Hanson Conway, combination defensively. Will we be able to handle those attacking?
Yeah, I think they will. Do you know what? What you're describing is going to make this game be absolutely fantastic, because both teams are going to be doing the same thing, are going to be shifting that ball out wide. Mm. It's going to be a fantastic game to see, with as both teams try to pry and find a gap somewhere. I think the wingers held themselves up, even Pukey Conway, whatever was going on there. I thought they were excellent. I thought they did exactly what was needed. Yes, they weren't challenged immensely in defence, and they will be today. There is no doubt about that. Conway, I think, is just a superb, highly underrated player still, I believe. I just think he's fantastic. Yeah. Mark, I think he stepped in and he just did what was needed. He took, there was one hit he went for and he absolutely nailed it. And so long as that continues, like, his stats in Connacht put him right up there with the defensive stats for the wingers in the country. So yeah, you can't have any fear. I'm still continuing with that, that we're not going to see anything, any gaps. France are going to have to work their way through this Irish defence. And now, the flip of that, you know, with the defensive coach they have, they are going to have something up their sleeve to combat the Irish attack.
Yeah, they will. They'll be well organised, no question about it. Okay, let's move on from the Ireland game. We're hugely excited about that. The other one, though, to kick off the day is at 2:15, as Wales are at home taking on Scotland. Scotland were, they got the job done. The conditions were terrible. England were also equally bad. But Scotland got the result, and it's a great result for them. But Wales equally were poor against us, and they... It's almost a bit of a must-win game for Wales at home in front of the crowd, because they've come in for a lot of criticism. Why do you see this one going?
Scotland. I see Scotland. Yeah, I do. I think Scotland are going to be a real threat in the Six Nations. I think something's happened there. They've turned a corner. I think the injuries now that they've had this week are obviously a big blow. What's the name of the back row? I can't think of his name, sorry. But the...
Ferguson.
Yeah. And there's a gritty underbelly to them, which is very, very good. And Wales, you know, they're suffering with, like, everybody kind of tried to dismiss before the Ireland game, you know, the injuries they have. Like, they're missing six or seven Lions.
Yeah.
Like, there's a massive amount of experience missing. And if Scotland come out and just tear into them, I think Wales will be in trouble. Now, look, we all know Wales have the ability at home in particular to pull out a massive result. They always were able to do that when they're wearing that red jersey. But, you know, they're under 20s won.
Yeah.
You know, at the weekend, we should give them a boost. But I would be thinking that Scotland genuinely are turning the corner here. I think they're... When they're good, they're playing a nice brand of rugby. There's a great tenacity in them that I think will put them ahead. And I think Wales are recovering and will recover in time to play England, which is in 2 weeks' time. That's what I think Wales will be right for. I don't think they're ready yet.
Okay. And speaking of England, obviously that was a huge blow to them last week, losing that game to Scotland. Away to Italy today. And under pressure, Eddie Jones, has to be said, is under pressure in his coaching role.
Yeah.
And this is a squad of players who have to perform. And you can't but feel that Italy are going to be on the receiving end of a bit of a hiding today.
Well, they need to do it, though. They need to go out. England, for themselves, need to go out and do an absolutely barnstorming game. Mm. They need to go out and get rid of any doubt of that there is any hiccups or ripples in the camp or anything like that. They need to just go out and tear into Italy. Now, the problem they have is that, you know, Italy still have the fatal flaw that when they make a mistake, one mistake, they give away a try. And that's the problem. But, like, in between, like, against France, there was a lot of play where France couldn't make any ground against them. There's a lot of good play coming out of Italy. And if England get caught up in that, you know, you remember whenever you play Italy, you have to not allow yourself to get wrapped up into the game that they want it to be.
Yeah.
You have to stay back from it and just play your game. That's the key to it. And, you know, if England get wrapped up into that, it could be a very, very long day for them.
Time to turn our attention now to football. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. It's a brilliantly packed sport weekend. We're flat out watching everything that's going on, so I'm in great form. But it was busy last night as well. It all kind of kicked off with the President's Cup. Familiar sight in some ways in Rovers lifting the trophy, but it was by no means easy and it had to go to penalties.
Yeah, I went to penalties, Reggie. It was a great night, great occasion. Something similar to the weather, what we're seeing this morning. The weather played its part last night because it was very windy and blustery, to be fair to the players. It wasn't the best game in the world, certainly the first half, but the second half livened up. But there was a great crowd. I think there was over 5,000 at the game, Reggie, for President's Cup. It was absolutely brilliant. And I suppose it just goes to show what we've been chatting about over the last number of weeks and even last season in terms of the appetite and the hunger that's there now for people to get back out to matches, and also the interest that seems to be in the League of Ireland, which is great as well. So it was a brilliant curtain raiser. St. Pat's played really, really well on the night. I was actually a bit surprised by St. Pat's because they've lost a lot of players from that team Stephen O'Donnell had last year, and they obviously finished second and won the cup, and they've lost some of the key players like Robbie Benson, Alfie Lewis, Matty Smith, the goalkeeper as well, Yaros, Lee Desmond. But to be fair to Tim Clancy, he seems to have assembled a decent enough team and squad as well. Whether they can challenge Shamrock Rovers, I'm not so sure. I would have thought not before last night. But looking at them last night, I think they'll be competitive. I still don't think they'll challenge Rovers for the league. But I think the Pats fans can be very hopeful about maybe another good season that get themselves into Europe or possibly do well in the cup also. So they probably deserved it on the night, Reggie. It was 1-1 overall. A mistake from the Pats keeper after Owen Doyle, that man who we've spoken about also, he got the goal for St. Pat's and played very well on the night also. But then a mistake from the young goalkeeper Anang, who's on loan, allowed Shamrock Rovers back into the game. And it kind of played out fairly then after that for the next 20 minutes, half an hour, 1-1 draw. But it went to penalties, and the main man, Jack Byrne, stepped up to get the winning penalty. So it was a good night for Shamrock Rovers in that regard. But I think, to be fair to Stephen Bradley, he even came out afterward and says they didn't deserve to win on the night.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, it kind of, as you said, it's a good start to everything, get things underway, and it tees things up nicely for next week, of course, with the league kicking off next Friday night. And some interesting ties in that now. I mean, you're saying Pats are maybe not quite the team that they were last year, but they've got Shells away on Friday night as their first game. Would you still fancy them to have a go at that one?
Yeah, definitely. I think they'll be good. Yeah. I just don't think, as I say, from what the team that they had last year, where we felt Stephen O'Donnell was on the verge of maybe building something good and big, to lose those players, it's very, very hard. And Tim has obviously come in. But looking at them last night, I was very impressed with them. I thought they played really, really well. They had a good shape and structure about them as well. So I think they'll have a decent season. But it's just Shamrock Rovers are so strong, Reggie, and the squad that they have. And even looking at them last night, where they didn't play anywhere near the level that they can, they still have some serious quality. Like the three subs they brought on in the second half, Richie Towell, Burke and Rory Gaffney, just tells you the squad that they have. And even you look at, there was other lads on the bench that never even featured, Pico Lopez, Chris McCann as well. So they have a serious squad, which will take a lot of stopping. But definitely Pat's going into the game next week. They can be very hopeful of the season ahead. And I think they should beat Shelburne as well. Shelburne have changed their whole squad around also, Reggie. And obviously they have the addition of Damien Duff on the sideline too. So it'll be interesting to see what he brings and what Shelburne, the team, brings also. But looking at Pat's last night, I think they'd fancy their chances to beat Shells.
The other very interesting tie next Friday night is Dundalk at home to Derry City. Now, I know Dundalk have been having their issues in the last couple of seasons, but Derry City, a club that, again, at your live podcast, we were hashing this out a little bit. They've got a lot of money and they've been throwing around cash to buy players. So this tie is going to be, like, Dundalk almost need to lay down a marker early this season, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. And they were beaten last night in what they call the Malone Cup. It's like their curtain raiser for the season to play the local rivals, Drogheda. Were beaten 2-1. So I don't know, Reggie, about Dundalk. As I said many times since the Cup final, I thought Stephen O'Donnell was mad to leave St. Pat's and go to Dundalk. But he has a connection with that club, an emotional connection as well, where he was so successful. And maybe in his eyes, he couldn't turn that down and wanted to go back there. But even looking at the job he has in hand, it's very much a rebuilding job. And I think it's similar to what he inherited when he took over St. Pat's, that they're very much in transition and trying to rebuild. So I think the best Dundalk can hope for this year is something what maybe he did at St. Pat's and get them into Europe and build for next year. I can't see them challenging in any way, shape or form this year. And if it's a tough start, as you said, Derry, who this year, for the first time, there's a lot of expectation on them because, as you rightly point out, the budget has been increased and there's money there now, and there's huge expectation on Rory Higgins. Not so much that I think it's expectation that if he doesn't deliver a league title that he might be in peril of his job or anything like that, but I just, they do expect a title challenge because of the players that they brought in, and obviously Duffy McElhaney from Dundalk, Will Patching as well, Brian Maher, the goalkeeper from Bray, Brandon Kavanagh, Cameron Dumigan. They've brought in a lot of players, Reggie, and a lot of very good players. Mm. So, but it's a tough start for them. They've Dundalk away and then they've Shamrock Rovers at home the following week. So it's a tough start, but it should be an absolutely brilliant start for them because the following week I'm expecting 5,000-7,000 in the Brandywell for the Shamrock Rovers game. So there's a lot of hype around the league at the moment. A lot of people looking forward to the season kicking off. As I said, it was 5,500 in Tala last night for the President's Cup. So it all bodes well, and hopefully we can have a really good season, Reggie.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well, I have to be honest. I've taken more interest in recent years in the league, and it's I find it intriguing, you know. There's a lot of different things that go on. But, like, I'd love a good season. I'd love a, Rovers are champions, obviously. I'd like a good challenge to them. I know Derry will provide some of that. But who else would you say we should watch out for to challenge Rovers this year?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'd be of a similar view, Reggie. I hope we get a competitive league and some sort of a title race. We haven't had that for the last couple of years. Obviously, the COVID year, there was only 18 games, but Shamrock Rovers won that at a canter. And last year, the first full season back since COVID, they ran out easy winners as well. So I'm looking for someone to step up to the plate. Derry, as you say, I think are the favourites to probably do that and challenge Shamrock Rovers because of the reasons we outlined. I'm not so sure about the challengers that were there last year, Sligo and St. Pat's. But looking at Pat's last night, I'd give them more of a chance. I thought they played really, really well, and they were very good on the night. Again, do they have the squad to push and pursue a title challenge? I don't know, but hopefully they can step up to the plate. Sligo Rovers, for me, Reggie, have regressed. I've been very disappointed with Sligo Rovers in the off-season. They lost their two best players in Johnny Kenny and John Mahon, and they simply haven't replaced them, or they haven't even looked like replacing them. They've brought in Aidan Keane, who was obviously across the water, so a lot to prove on his part. And they brought in O'Sullivan and Fitzgerald on the wings as well, who were kind of, I would have thought, would be more backup squad players. I was expecting Sligo Rovers to hopefully make some sort of a marquee signing in the off-season after them finishing in Europe last year. So I'd be very disappointed with them. And then it's probably Bohemians who've lost two or three key players as well. Buckley, their captain, Cornwall, Ross Tierney, their goal scorer, Georgie Kelly. So it's very much rebuilding for them as well. But Keith Long has always been very good at that when he loses players in recruiting, very good players. But whether they can mount the challenge, I don't know, Reggie. So I think Shamrock Rovers are rightly favourites, as we all know. And the only ones I can see that can maybe put it up to them and challenge them is Derry City.
Okay, well, if we quickly go across the water just to cover it, Alan, Liverpool are away to Burnley, and we know City are 9 points clear, but Liverpool do have a game in hand. So is there anywhere we can see a bit of a slip to make this kind of a two-horse title race going on?
Yeah, I'm still holding out hope, Reggie. I think Liverpool are not out of this yet. The game in hand is key. Obviously, once they get the points on the board and that, you're back to six. And of course, they have to play Man City as well. So that'll be an absolutely massive game if they were to get it back to 6 points and remain 6 points behind when that fixture comes around. So you obviously have the added complications now of the Champions League kicking in. So there'll be games there where you'd be hoping maybe, well, not hoping, obviously you want to see the teams do well, but in terms of a title race, maybe a distraction of a game midweek and they could falter then at the weekend or something like that. So I don't think the title race is just done and dusted just yet. I think Liverpool are still, they've done very well during that January month, especially when they had no Salah and no Mane. And Jota stepped up to the plate and obviously got a lot of goals and kept them in the hunt, so they didn't drop any points in those games. So I think they're still in the race, Reggie, definitely. And as I say, if they win the game in hand, that'll be a humdinger then when it comes down to the face-off between the two teams. I think that'll be a cracker.
Yeah, Chelsea have been a bit disappointing this season, haven't they?
And I built them up at the start of the year. I thought they'd really go close, Reggie. And for whatever reason, now Tuchel was putting it down to, to be fair, they did have some bad COVID, obviously, and look, we all know, and we've gone through that. I don't even want to bring up that stuff again. Yeah. Hopefully that's all done and dusted, but they did have some kind of trouble around that, and obviously injuries as well, and he was saying they were a bit fatigued. So I don't know, Reggie. They have a big squad that I thought they might have been able to cater for that, but they have been disappointing. You're right. I was hoping, like when we look back maybe September, October time, I was thinking we could be in for the best title race we've ever had with three teams going at it. But as you say, Chelsea's challenge has certainly faltered and petered away. But I think Liverpool are still in the hunt. I wouldn't write them off just yet.
No, absolutely. And that top four slot is looking very juicy. You've got United on 39, Arsenal on 39, West Ham on 40, and even Spurs on 36. So that's going to go right down to the wire for the top four.
Absolutely, Reggie. Yeah, and you'd want to have a word with your mate Arteta and sort out the disciplinary issues. The fella's getting sent off every week. I don't know what's that all about. To be fair, because but it was a great result for them beating Wolves down to 10 men as well.
Exactly. Yeah. I know. I mean, I look quietly sitting there in fifth place without too much of a fuss going on, and that's probably the best place to have Arsenal because, you know, if there's any fuss going on about them or any chance that they're going to be challenging, they seem to fall apart. So that's probably the best way to have it. You've got podcasts, I presume, this week with the league starting, have you?
It's back. Yeah. It's back, Reggie. Yeah. So we're back on Tuesday. Neil O'Riordan from The Sun is going to come in, and basically, we're going to preview the league for the first show, and we're also going to look back at obviously the announcements that were made last week with the European Championship bid as well, and also the FEI strategy going forward for the next 3 years. So that's going to kick off on Tuesday, and we'll be back every week then.
GAA with Declan Drake on Dublin's Talking Sport.
Good morning and welcome to our look at the GAA scene around the capital. The main focus today is football and the Kilmacud Crokes bid for a third All-Ireland Senior Club Football Championship title. The Purple and Gold were previously successful in 1995 and 2009, both against Ulster opposition. To be crowned champions this evening, they will once again have to overcome a side from the north. Kilcoo of Down, this time, are the opposition from 5 o'clock in Croke Park. Joining me now to look ahead to this massive occasion is Nigel McCarthy of We Are Dublin. Thanks, Nigel, for being with us this morning on what we hope will be a great day for Crokes. I certainly know the sense of excitement quite palpable out around Stillorgan all week in anticipation of this one. Crokes, of course, qualifying for the final with a semi-final victory over Pádraig Pearse's 111-8 points in Kingspan Breffni Park recently. Now, it was a really strong, lively end to that game, Nigel, which saw Crokes power their way to the decider.
Yeah, Declan, yeah, there was only a point. There'd been 20 minutes of the second half played, and there was still only a point between the two sides. And Crokes hit the afterburners after that and scored the next 5 points to claim victory. Again, look, as they've done in a lot of their games this season, they've relied heavily on their strength and depth. There's Keane O'Connor, Connor Casey and Anthony Quinn came off the bench and scored four of those final five, last 5 points to see them over the line and into the final.
A lot, of course, has been made of the Paul Mannion effect since he suffered that knee just ahead of the Leinster final victory over Naas, but since then, we've seen different players step up to the plate, really take responsibility and take the games by the scruff of the neck. Tom Fox, for example, in that Leinster final against Naas.
Yeah, look, they've a really talented squad, and they've certainly proven they're not a team that relies just on one man. You know, look, you're talking about ex-Dublin players. They've got Craig Diaz in there as well. You know, Tom Fox, Darren Mullen, Callum Pearson, Shane Horan, Andrew McGowan, that's just to name a few of them. Look, there's talent all the way through the side, through all of the different lines. And look, if you're going to get to All-Ireland Finals, you need that, you know, and if you're going to win titles, you need that, and they certainly have that. Yet, look, when Paul got injured there, and look, most people knew that he was going to be missing for the rest of the championship. Some people might have been looking at it, you know, look, he's a huge talent. There's nothing else you can say about Paul Mannion with what he's done over the years at both club and inter-county level. But, you know, Crokes went on to prove, as I said, they're not a one-player team. And as you said, other guys have had to step up to the plate and, you know, they've won the games and that's all you can really ask from them.
They have been impressive as well with the different types of victories that they've had all through this championship as well, having to come from behind in certain games with strong second half performances, and in other situations then being in control.
Yeah, that's right. Look, we look at the county final, a very strange final. Look, some games are like that. They're very tight encounters. They have had to come back from some deficits on the scoreline.
Thanks indeed for that, Nigel. Now, throw in for the big game this evening at Croke Park is at 5 o'clock, and we here on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 take the opportunity of wishing Robbie Brennan and all the Kilmacud Crokes crew every success in their bid to bring the All-Ireland title back to Páirc de Bhurgair this evening. Staying with men's football, it was a disappointing Saturday evening trip to Tralee last week for Dublin, who lost their second consecutive Alliance National Football League clash, this time to the Kingdom of Kerry, in what could only be described as atrocious conditions in Austin Stacks Park in Tralee. Kerry very strong in the first half, with the elements deservedly in front, despite the fact that Dublin did mount a significant comeback in the second half, just fell short ultimately in the end to make the long trip home back from Tralee still pointless in the league. Next up for the Blues is a home date next Saturday evening against Mayo at Croke Park. That as part of a doubleheader with the ladies team, who will play Cork in the National Football League as well. Speaking of ladies, and what a great weekend it was for St Jude's and St Sylvester's, both of whom were crowned All-Ireland club champions in their respective grades. Jude's overcoming Mullinahone of Tipperary to claim the junior title. Well, 24 hours later, it was the turn of St Sylvester's. They made the trip back from Duggan Park and Ballinasloe with the cup and the title of Intermediate Queens of Ireland as well. So congratulations to everyone connected with both clubs on a fantastic success last weekend. And finally, with ladies football, the Lidl National Football League gets underway this weekend. Dublin, the defending Division 1 champions, are on the road. They will be at Fraher Field in Dungarvan tomorrow afternoon to take on the home side of Waterford. That getting underway at 2 o'clock. Mick Bowen's Chargers facing the Dacia for the second consecutive year in the opening round of the league. They did beat them last year at Parnell Park, while of course beating them also in the championship as well. Finally, this week to hurling, and a stirring Parnell Park draw for Dublin in the opening game of Division 1B in the Alliance National Hurling League. The Blues drawing with the Dacia of Waterford, 2-15 to Dublin's 21 points. Both sides indeed finishing with 14 men, which is hardly a surprise when you consider that 14 yellow cards and 2 black cards were issued before the pair of reds later in the contest. But overall, I think on a difficult Parnell Park pitch, a share of the spoils was the fair result. After the game, I took the opportunity to speak to Dublin boss Matty Kenny.
You know, the conditions were tough out there. The pitch wasn't perfect by no means. But I think both sides and fairs, like, you know, they went at it strongly, and it was good challenging stuff for this time of the year. And you know, Waterford brought a really good team, a strong team, and a really good attitude. And you know, it was I think a good performance from both sides.
Fair result, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, look, a lot went on in that game. Like, you know, like we suffered 2 black cards and red cards in the finish. So, you know, we had the conditions in the first half. So, you know, we would like to have built up a bigger lead than we had. And I think when they got the first penalty, you know, that gave them a little bit of momentum, or stopped our momentum. But, you know, we had to fight for that back in that first half. And I think we took 4 or 5 point lead into half time. Probably not enough in these conditions, but, you know, in fairness, I thought our lads showed massive character there in the second half. When things seemed to be going against them, they stayed in the game, kept coming up against the field against that breeze, and got a few vital scores, which got us the draw in the end of the day. And I think, I suppose, in fairness, I think it was a fair result for both sides. I didn't think it was, but there was a lot of rooks in it, like, and you know, you're both sides very, very committed. Like, you know, there's, you know, like when the ball is getting stuck in the pitch like that, a lot of guys are going to gain around it, and you know, obviously they're using their strength and using their weight, like, and yeah, there's a few yellow cards given out, like, but look at there was nothing nasty in the game as such. There's just 2 very competitive sides going hard at it, like, and I thought.
Well, next week you step it up again, going to Corrigan Park in Belfast to play the home team, who of course you've played already in the Walsh Cup this year. It'll be a different type of game, you suspect, up there next week.
It definitely, and look, it's a really, really hard place to go get a result, like, you know, and like we see in last year's league, like, you know, Wexford struggled up there and Clare struggled up there, like, you know, and Antrim, you know, they're doing really good work there, you know, they're really improving as a team, like, and when you go up to Corrigan Park, like, you know, it's not going to be easy, like, so we're expecting a really tough encounter up there next week as well.
It was a tough physical battle out there. You'll obviously have a couple of niggles and that to concern yourself over the next few days.
Yeah, we'll, and look at, you know, Derek Gray, like, you know, know, he tweaked his hamstring a little bit there in the warm-up, like, you know, and as you know, like, Keane O'Sullivan is pulled his hamstring in the Walsh Cup. He's out for foreseeable future. Keane Boland, we've got to get Keane back. Then he tried to get Mark Shute back, you know, Shane Barris, you know, Liam Rush, get all these guys back. And, like, you know, we said all along we wanted to build a strong squad and a strong panel. Like, you know, and look at, we've lost the guys there to bring in. Like, which, you know, as the league goes on into the championship, we'd be hoping trying to get a clean bell of health.
We spoke about Eamon Dillon after the game against Wexford last week, and he was chomping at the bit to come in there, and he got a fine point again this evening. The competition for places in that forward division must be particularly pleasing for you at the moment.
It is, and look at Trollier has been, you know, he's out for 7 or 8 months, like, you know. So look at, we're trying, you know, we don't want to rush him back too soon, because, you know, he's such a vital part of this Dublin setup, and he's such an important forward to us, like, you know. So we just want to give him blocks of time, and, you know, half match here, half match there, like, you know, to build up his fitness and make sure he stays injury free, like, as you know, he'd be hugely important as going forward in the league and into the championship.
Thanks indeed there to Matty Kenny, and the best of luck to him and the Dublin team taking on Antrim at Corrigan Park this afternoon from 2 o'clock. As we said at the piece there, they've already played them and beat them in the Walsh Cup earlier in the year. That was at Parnell Park, but Antrim at home, a different prospect, so it'll be interesting to see how that one pans out up there this afternoon on the banks of the Foyle. Well, that's about it for GAA this week. Thank you very much indeed for listening. We'll be back at the same time next Saturday morning with a review of all the action, including hopefully an All-Ireland club title for the men of Kilmacud Crokes.
It's Super Bowl time. It's on tomorrow night. The Bengals versus the Rams, two surprising finalists for many people. But here to discuss it is, as always, Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Good, Reg. We've made it. We've made it. You know, COVID ravaged seasons and everything else. But yeah, we've got there. It's amazing. And as you said, two teams, Reg. These are two fourth seed teams. So anybody out there who's saying, oh, I knew it'd be the Rams and the Bengals, they need to wake up. You know, this wasn't predicted. This was a crazy matchup. But you know what? It's if the Chiefs had got there, people would be like, oh, not Patrick Mahomes again. If Tom Brady had got there, they'd be like, oh, not him again. You know, the Packers, people have a problem with that. So it actually seems like a game that's pretty good for the neutrals. And I was sore about it, Reg, with the Packers getting dumped out by the Niners when they shut and blah, blah, blah. But looking at this game, it should be good because there's a lot of storylines. You can root for players on either side, really.
Well, we'll get over that fact because we did think the Packers were going to get there. I know they were 14-1 outsiders at the beginning of the season, but they really looked like they were going to nail it. But, you know, when you leave all that aside, it is exciting in that it's somewhat unknown, you know, the Rams against the Bengals. Where is it on? And for our listeners, where is it on this time, the Super Bowl?
So it's SoFi Stadium, LA, which is strange because the Rams are actually seen as the sort of away team, the way they designate it, but it's their home stadium. So for the second year in a row, the Vikings could have had this shot a couple of years ago, and there was all this talk in the media like, oh my God, what's it going to be like if the team that's in the Super Bowl are at their home stadium? Now, the only thing is, so it's in SoFi Stadium in LA, so, you know, you'd think it's a home crowd, but it's not really, Reg. You and I have spoke about this over the years. It's a bunch of celebs and posers and, you know, people who pay 10 grand, 15 grand, 20 grand for a ticket to be there. So although the Rams are in their home stadium in LA, you know, they're used to, because you probably noticed, like, full well from your career in rugby, there's something about playing in your home stadium. You kind of know every blade of grass on the pitch. You know how the ball falls, the winds, and how it reacts. So it is important. But, yeah, so it's LA. So it's sunny. Mm-hmm. It's good weather. There won't be anything like, you know, because it was this whole regulation that if they were to have a game in a cold stadium, like up north, like up where Green Bay and Minnesota and stuff is that it has to be a closed over stadium because they don't want the weather ruining this spectacle for people. But yeah, look, full of posers, full of celebs and all that kind of stuff. But it's on 11:30 Irish time, and it's also on BBC, Sky. So it's free to air. So there's no excuse about it being behind a paywall. And if you don't want to stay up till 11:30 and watch it, because it will go into the wee hours, record it and watch it the next day, because it is pageantry and it is spectacle. It's great
to watch. Absolutely. And the big thing every year for a lot of people that they do tune in for or watch it online afterwards is, of course, the halftime entertainment. You know, have we gotten any leaks, or do we know who it is that's going to be playing it?
Yeah, we know who it is. And again, I don't know why they keep doing this. They've kind of, what it used to be seen as was, is that, you know, the red-blooded men, it's so sexist, the red-blooded men tune in and then, you know, the women would watch for the halftime show, which is complete nonsense, right? So they've got away from that thing of trying to give, you know, just sort of female dominated acts and stuff like that, because they realize that women are as crazy about the NFL over there than the men are, sometimes even more so. So what they've done is they've kind of have, I don't know why, they go for the blast from the past kind of people. We had The Weeknd, who hadn't got really a hot hit for a while. We had Lady Gaga, who hadn't got a hot hit. So this time they've gone for Eminem, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Kendrick Lamar, and Mary J. Blige. Now, Reg, you know, I don't know if you're a big Mary J. Blige fan, but I haven't heard her, particularly on this side of the pond, come out with a hit for at least 20 years. So it's a bit of nostalgia there, but it's good because it's hip-hop. You know, something that we usually, they sometimes go for this very soft pop kind of stuff. Don't mind me, it's okay. You know, Justin Timberlake and Lady Gaga and all the rest. So this should be a pretty good show, but
that
it's funny,
great.
Right?
That sounds like a fantastic
lineup. Actually sounds good.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I really do think Eminem is an incredible performer, and, you know, with all that around him, he'd probably run the show and everybody else jump in around him. So I'd say it'd be a brilliant show. That'd be well worth tuning in for. Okay, look forward to that. And then, of course, the other big thing is the ads and all of the stuff that goes around it. You hear of millions changing hands for the likes of Coca-Cola and these guys to be paying for 30 seconds. What's the running amount this year?
Well, Sunshine, I know you're probably going to, you were thinking about putting an ad in this year, but you'd have to shell over $6.5 million for a 30-second clip. So, I mean, you and Ken would have to be on your best behavior for those. But it's crazy though, Reg, right? So people look at these ads, they're not only, they look at the money and they go, oh my God, that's crazy. But the thing is these are entertainment. So whatever they spend for, to pay the television network $6.5 million to actually host the ad, millions upon millions go into actually making them. But they looked at it that 79% of all viewers see the commercials as actual entertainment. Hmm. So it's not an ad. It's sort of a little showpiece, a bit of comedy
there's
or whatever.
A story, and there's a script. There's everything around them. Yeah, I get that. Yeah,
And they leak on their own, right? And what they found was back in 2019 that there was 641,000 hours of Super Bowl ads being watched on YouTube around the time of the game. So if they don't catch them for the game, they're watching them again on YouTube. So it's an investment for people, and it's really talked about.
Stephen, you know, the actual game itself, I mean, it's like the World Series in baseball. It's only in America, but it's, you know, it does capture the world, the Super Bowl. It's viewed from literally every corner. Do we know kind of from last year the numbers that they get live watching?
Yeah, like it does. It's very unpredictable, Reg, because what's been happening is, and the NFL has been pushing this, that they tried to move people to streaming sites, because when they were trying to gauge people sitting in their homes, it was very difficult for them. But the usual ballpark figure is about 100 million in the States, and then between 30 and 50 million around the world. Now, that's massive for a very niche sport, one that you and I talk about, but there's some people that haven't got a rash of what's going on because they're not interested in it. It's on too late. The games are too long. Mm. But if you look at that for likes of the FIFA World Cup, that gets 516 million live viewers with over 1.1 billion people tuning in over the 90 minutes. Mm. So when you look at that, it pales in comparison, but it is the biggest sporting event pretty much in any given year that those big events aren't on. So probably around 100 to 105 million this year.
Excellent. Okay, let's talk about the game itself then. The Rams against the Bengals, tale of two quarterbacks, young up-and-coming Bengals, Joe Burrow, and then the veteran Matt Stafford, of course, for the Rams. What way do we think it's going to go? What's your prediction?
Well, the Rams are the favourites. They're favourites by 4 points. But funnily enough, is that the favourites in Super Bowl since 2010 are the underdogs are 5-1 when they come up against that. And the only team to lose that game is the Falcons. And they were up 28-3 at halftime and they blew the lead. So by all intents, if you're a betting man and you believed in voodoo, well, then you'd go for the Bengals in this. Look, Joe Burrow, as you said, Joe Burrow is the young quarterback. He got his knee blown out. They thought his career was over. There was a picture of him before the season sitting on a throne, as they do. And they showed the scarring on his knee. And even looking at that, people thought, oh, I think this guy's over. But he has a record completion percentage. Now, what does that mean? When he throws the ball your way, more than likely his receivers catch it. And that's a pretty big deal in the NFL. So they've got massive weapons. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase, Reg, he's a dynamite wide receiver, so they seem like they're going to be the game wreckers there. Again, Ja'Marr Chase played with Joe Burrow in college, so that's really exciting and sexy and dynamic and all this type of stuff. But on the other side of the ball, Matt Stafford, he's been in the league 13 seasons now. He's with the Lions. He's never won a playoff game until this season when he moved over to the Rams, and he's brought them the whole way. Really quickly then, I guess, for a sort of game time prediction, the Rams have a guy called Aaron Donald, and this is probably the best player in the NFL, regardless of position. He absolutely wrecks the game. he's on defense, gets after the quarterback. So when you look at Joe Burrow, he got sacked 9 times against the Titans in the playoffs, and the Titans didn't have a player like Aaron Donald. So this guy should be a game wrecker. On top of that, then they have other Grizzly veterans around the squad that are just really eager to win a Super Bowl for themselves, but also for their other players. On top of that, Sean McVay is a young coach with an old team. He's been here before. He got waxed by Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl. So he seems to be more level-headed when it comes to it. Add to that, the Bengals have never won a Super Bowl, and their coach, Zach Taylor, tends to stick with the run even when it's not working. And if that happens in this game, Reg, they're going to be in 3 and long situations, and that's probably a bit too much for Joe Burrow to overcome. I'm not saying he won't, because he's fairytale stuff, but I reckon the Rams win this. And if they win it, I think it'll be a blowout. But if the Bengals win it, it'll be by a last-minute field goal. But my money's on the Rams in this game.
Well, Stephen, we'll certainly follow your advice. And it's been brilliant all season. I want to thank you personally for all the effort and fantastic work you've put in throughout the year in enlightening all of our listeners, because not everybody on this side of the water is a NFL fan, but you've certainly made it interesting for them. So thanks, and it's been a great season, and we look forward to catching you again when the next season starts.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.